The Ordination of Montgomery Jackson by Mike Varley. Marmalade. Marmalade. Ernesto opens his eyes. Marmalade. He pulls back the covers gently, carefully, so as not to get his adrenaline going, which could screw it all up. Measured steps lead down the hallway to the bathroom. He leaves the bathroom in darkness, relying on shower time instinct. The shower is trained on his forehead, plugging his ears with water and giving his thoughts a car wash atmosphere. Marmalade. Marmalade, ace of spades. Marmalade, smooth as suede. Marmalade in the shade. Marmalade, Thomas Kincaid. Marmalade versus jams. Citrus growers in South America, colonial England and its influence on breakfast, tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Already it's hopeless. It's been 6 months since Ernesto, the dream poet, has had a dream he can remember. He moves the showerhead from his face and stares blankly into the bathroom, not caring to soap up or shampoo. How easy it had been in his youth, penning devastating love poems or great social truths in 20 minutes, bedheaded and boxer briefed. Flash forward 15 years and there he is, grasping at fruit preserves. Ernesto turns off the shower and gets out, still half dry. He grabs hold of his girlfriend's threadbare pink robe on the back of the door and decides to put it on, then wraps her hair towel around his head to complete the look. Ernesto walks around the apartment with robe wide open, looking at all his things. The towering collection of LPs taking up the entire shelving unit behind his couch. Memorabilia from his state capitol tour, 1994. His first edition copy of Gregor Mendel's Experiments on Plant Hybridization. Long had he felt indifferent to their presence in his home, but now he actively hates the sight of them. Ernesto disrobes and lays down naked on the living room floor, legs and arms spread. He looks like a furry gravity experiment and feels like a memorized edition of Trivial Pursuit. At 39, does he already have nothing left to offer the world? Did he have anything to offer the world in the first place? Why can't he be more like his girlfriend, Almond? Still vibrant and impulsive after 38 years, she's been gone all weekend. Off at a protest in D.C. on big business in America. She had only learned about it that Thursday, but she didn't think for a second about not going. Ernesto had been like that once, impassioned, community-minded. But somewhere along the way, most probably during W's time, he had grown awfully world-weary. And what's left? A lowly regarded poet whose only official political action is donating $50 to PBS every year. He grabs the disrobed robe and jerks the material in frustration. There's a loud rip as the left sleeve comes off in Ernesto's hand. God damn it! This is not good. He and Almond are already on rocky terms as of late. She won't take kindly to coming home tonight and finding her favorite ratty bathrobe is halfway to being a bath vest. Ernesto goes into the bedroom to look for his emergency sewing kit, all the while muttering about the things he has to do today that isn't this. Somewhere along the way, the alarm clock on his clock radio went off. War's Lowrider is playing, and now he just knows it's going to be in his head the rest of the day. He finally discovers the kit amongst the rubble of his closet floor. He turns off the radio and goes about making his bed comfortable for sitting. There, under the covers, naked and frustrated, he starts the tedious mending process. Ernesto knocks on the door of his sister's house to the rhythm of the horn section from Lowrider. He's clothed now, in attire that screams, parent-teacher conference. Fortunately, he is going to a parent-teacher conference with his nephew, Trent, so the only word his outfit screams is, appropriate! Monty, you're early for once, Helena says on opening the door. I couldn't miss me and Trent's big day, could I? Ernesto replies, all the while looking around at the sky. It's really no big deal, Monty. I'm sure they're just going to tell you the same thing they've told me the past 3 years. He's a good boy with strong marks in every subject. Well, it'll be good to hang out with Trent anyway. Is he ready yet? Yeah, hold on. Helena cranes her neck. Trent! She yells up the stairs. Uncle Monty is here. Do you want to come in? No. I like the air out here, thank you. It's so perfectly fall, Ernesto expresses with wonder. Yeah. Trent! Your uncle's waiting. Ernesto can hear Trent on the creaky wooden stairs, descending with an unrushed, even-paced rhythm, as though he's tying a tie as he walks. In actuality, he's drinking a cup of coffee and reading an article in Boys Life magazine. He had tied his tie upstairs. Ah, here's young Master Bismarck now. Hello, Uncle Monty. It's good to see you again. Hey, Boys Life, huh? What is fourth grade again, Weeblo? Yes, though I'm with the fifth grade Weeblos now. I've accomplished everything a fourth grade Weeblo can do over the summer. Wow, that's pretty impressive, Trent. Congratulations. You must be very proud, Mom. Well, that's Austin's area mostly, but yes, very proud. Well, you ready to go, bud? Trent gives the coffee cup and a firm hug to his mother. Brother and sister exchange goodbyes, with Ernesto still marveling at the sky. He distractedly gets into the car, a tan 1982 Cadillac Coupe de Ville rusted at the wheel wells. He pulls onto the street and rolls down his window. Have fun at the arraignment, he shouts, and the two drive off. I don't think that's the type of thing you should yell in farewell, Uncle Monty. Ernesto's veneer of happiness deteriorates with each manual window crank. You're probably right, Trent. No, you're definitely right. That was rather inappropriate of me. Arraignments are no public matter. Trent makes room for his feet in the backseat footwell, displacing some sweatshirts, a broken computer printer, a plastic bag filled with old eyeglasses, and an unsheathed garden machete. Would you consider me a success, Trent? I don't really know where you're going with this, Uncle Monty. You've known me for what? How long? I mean, objectively, do you think my life has been a success to this point? It depends. You know what? Don't answer that. That's not a fair question. You shouldn't have to answer that. Success is completely determined by the individual. After a thoughtful silence, Trent replies, it sounds like you need to re-examine your barometer for success, then.
It's not just that, Trent. It's everything. Where am I going? Where have I come from? I feel like a memorized copy of Trivial Pursuit. Does that make any sense to you?
Not really, no.
Fine, that's okay. I don't fault you. I don't fully understand it myself. No, I fully understand it, and I think that might be part of the problem, Trent. I've devoted my entire life to the study of the peculiar, and already I'm burned out. Completely tapped with half a life to go.
You're probably just in a rut, Uncle Monty.
Ruts,
Ernesto says dismissively.
I've been in ruts before. Spent a year as a shop boy at a gay bar in Kingston, having sex with beautiful tourists, doing...
Look, I've said too much already. Don't repeat that to Helena. She doesn't know about that.
The point is, even when I wasn't writing poetry, I still dreamt poetry every night. The most wonderfully bizarre scenes. Have you ever read any of my poetry?
I must confess, I haven't.
That's okay. You're not really the target audience. You see, all my work is dream-inspired. I've never written about anything I wasn't obsessed enough to dream about. Trent, I haven't had an interesting dream in 6 months. It's dreamer's block or something.
Couldn't you just start drawing inspiration from things other than your dreams? A brief chill sweeps through the roomy coupe interior.
I don't know how to begin to answer that question, Trent. I really don't.
Ernesto is quick to recant.
No, you're just trying to help. I'm sorry I reacted that way. It's a good question. No, you're just trying to help. I'm sorry I reacted that way. It's a good question. I can't discard my creative process as easily as all that. It's all I know. I'd just as soon shoot my wife if I were married. Or your mom. I'd just as soon shoot your mom before I could change, Trent.
Ernesto looks into his rearview mirror to gauge Trent's reaction, but all he can see is Trent's Alec Baldwin-esque coif.
Fine. Have you experimented with any mind-altering substances? From what I understand, they can have some positive effects on artistic endeavors. Trenton, Salem, Bismarck. I sure hope I didn't just hear what I think I did. Substance abuse is no way to go through life. If you say one more thing like that, we are not going to Burger King later. Do you understand? Yes, sir. Stepping through the threshold of St. John's Parochial School, a flood of memories from his time spent here suddenly appear in Ernesto's head. His first kiss, scoliosis test, and public vomiting all occurred within these hallowed walls. I'm going to go talk with my friend Carson. You can walk around if you want. Our session with Brother Paul isn't for another. Trent flicks his wrist out and pulls back the sleeve of his dress shirt, revealing a modest gold watch. 20 minutes. Okay, sounds good. Oh, and Trent. Yes, Trent says, turning back around from down the hallway. I love you, bud. Yes, I love you too, Uncle Monty. Ernesto walks the halls, looking everywhere but straight ahead. He's practically smothered in childhood nostalgia. His brain keeps trying to start up old memories that were long ago scavenged. The relevant parts chopped up for scrap and cataloged in a file labeled Grade School Experience. As a result, Ernesto's senses keep overlapping and contradicting each other. The smooth water fountain porcelain recalls the smell of honeysuckle that grows outside the music room windows. The groaning of the radiator brings the taste of fundraiser candy bars to his mouth. The only damper on the whole experience is the mental static caused by all the arts and crafts projects covering every available inch of hallway space. Hoping to prove to parents that their children are being productive in school, teachers drag out every time-killing project they've done with the kids so far this year and assign several more the week before the big day just to be sure. It's all there. Construction paper scarecrows, pasta skeletons, paper plate jack-o'-lanterns, and glitter? You betcha. While they're cute on an individual level, the sheer volume of projects in the confined space is just too much for him to take. He walks this hallway as quick as he can and makes for the exit to the side parking lot. Once outside, Ernesto sits on the bench where he and his classmates found a condom wrapper during sixth grade recess. The blustery October wind whips across the parking lot plain, forming powerful vortexes in the dips and folds of the blacktop. Fallen leaves from the surrounding maples give the eddies a physical presence, producing fluttering leaf geysers as high as 8 feet tall. It had been the subject of Ernesto's first ever poem. Untitled. This will help you understand the leaves. They're twice as tall as me, and if you try to hug them, the wind takes them away from you. Even still, I try every day. This will help you understand the leaves. In deep fall, there are so many you can't see through the geyser, and it looks like the leaves are trying to show you the branch they fell off of before they die. This will help you understand the leaves. I took my dog, Lacey, to see them before we put her to sleep. I carried her in my arms and chased the geysers for her while she barked. This will help you understand the leaves. I only know one other person in the world who knows about the leaves. This will help you understand the leaves. She showed them to me. Ernesto. She, Ernesto thinks. She. Announces the muffled PA. What? Ernesto asks aloud.
Mr. Jackson, please report to room 504 for the faculty meeting. Thank you.
Shit, Ernesto had completely forgotten about the meeting. And he had been so proud of himself for picking up Trent early. He sprints through the hallways, deftly avoiding human obstacles. It takes a confusing hallway intersection for Ernesto to realize he hasn't the first clue where room 505 is. Winded and confused, he looks back down the hallway he just plowed through. It's an arts and crafts catastrophe, Most projects are still billowing from his gale force movements. Poorly glued cotton balls and macaroni bits riddle the floor. There's a conspicuous trail of glitter leading up to his person. Adult reactions range from bemused to horrified, but the kids seem pretty happy with the show, giggling and whispering. He winks at a little Asian girl smiling at him and takes off at a sprint back down the hall. The flapping of the paper bags and construction paper, and even a few tiny bells, is now joined by the laughter of children. Parents are arrested and placed, uncertain of how to handle the situation. Without stopping, he U-turns for a third pass, a dervish of glitter trailing behind him. Confetti and feathers still hang in the air from the last run as bystanders watch from the safety of classroom doorways. Ernesto abruptly stops in the middle of the hallway and turns. The cloud of glitter dust at his heels pelts him like a giant powder puff from some vaudeville comedy act. The kids have passed the mere laughing stage and are in the shrieking throes of stimulus overload. It's always in moments as this, covered in glitter and looking at a confused audience, that Ernesto is uncertain of what to do next. There's enough craft crap on the floor to sprawl out for craft angels. A second grader runs out from behind her mother's leg and runs down the hall squealing, hoping to reproduce Ernesto's display. The classroom doorways turn into crazed children tributaries, lusting on havoc and liberation from the straight-laced conference atmosphere.
Mr. Jackson, please report to room 505 across from the front office. Mr. Jackson, 505 across from the office. Thank you.
Oh, he says, the library. He turns his back on the chaos and walks back down the hallway intersection. Anyone interested in knowing what the hell just happened is too busy stopping craft condiment fights or trying to catch up with their galloping children to pursue the matter. Ernesto steps into the library, face glowing and sparkling. His anxieties about being late for the meeting were all ran out of him. It doesn't take long to find Trent and Brother Paul, since the term library is more an honorary title for room 505 than anything. It's simply a classroom dressed up like a library, with bookshelves, one long wooden table, and a computer with internet access. Windows look out onto an authorized personnel-only courtyard. To St. John's students, the highest-ranking dare on campus is to run out there and touch the bird feeder at its center. The fluorescent lights are off in the room, save the one over the oak table where Trent and Brother Paul are sitting. The daylight outside is abruptly turned to dusk, shadowing everything in the room lying outside the fluorescence. He is struck with the shock of recognition.
Holy crap, Brother Paul!
How nice of you to join us, Mr. Jackson. Brother Paul stands up to greet Ernesto and is met with a puppy dog handshake.
Brother Paul, it's so good to see you again. See this man, Trent? He's a saint. Do you understand? An absolute saint.
Trent rolls his eyes and strums his fingers. St. Paul, Uncle Monty, got it. Brother Paul looks exasperated.
Monty, it's great to see you again, but what happened to you?
Ernesto looks down at his parent-teacher conference outfit, all jazzed up with a sparkly coat of awesome.
Oh, this? Ernesto says matter-of-factly. Yeah, I got hit by a glitter tornado. But you! I want to hear about you!
Brother Paul, eloquent man that he is, spends the next 2 minutes giving a beautiful synopsis of the past 30 years, free of false modesty or generalized blanket statements. It dawns on Ernesto that he's never really heard the question, "How are you?" answered properly until just this moment. He's touched that Brother Paul would put such thought into his words and eagerly awaits the chance to reciprocate. When Brother Paul's "and how are you" does come, warm and compassionate, Ernesto opens up to him. But unlike Brother Paul's refined, thought-out response, Ernesto's account is more like an on-demand regurgitation. Stray evenings in Kingston and entire decades of experience are treated as though equally crucial to the Ernesto story, and orated with no regard to chronology whatsoever. Brother Paul politely interrupts when Ernesto pauses to remember the font type used in the St. James Bible that led him to a brief stint in evangelical Christianity. Monty, I'd love to hear the rest of your story, but we should probably talk a bit about Trent. Of course, of course. Please, tell me everything about Trent. Well, Trent's a good boy. Strong marks in every subject. I knew it! I bet all the kids like him too, huh? Actually, yes. He seems to really bring out the best in all the children. Well, that's just Trent for you, brother. He's a real good kid. Truth be told, the whole family's very proud of him. You should be, Brother Paul replies warmly. Ernesto turns his head to Trent. Now don't get all big-headed about the praise, okay? It's very easy to stumble down the rock star path. I don't think you'll have to worry about that, Monty. No, no, you're absolutely right, Brother Paul. I know he's a good kid. It's just good to keep it out there. So, please, tell me more. Well, honestly, there's not much more to be said. We seem to be in accordance. Do we still have time left? If you have questions, certainly. And like that, Ernesto's demeanor changes, as though happiness is the big gulp of air you expel after holding your breath. Out comes the self-doubt and violent contradictions Ernesto expressed to Trent. But this time, things seem different. Brother Paul is so much more calming than Trent. Not that Trent was bad, Ernesto's inner monologue defends, as Brother Paul artfully refers to a bit of scripture that parallels Ernesto's situation. He's just not a brother. Suddenly it hits him, as it is apt to do. An epiphany of a kind he hadn't felt in at least a dozen years. Brother, what can you tell me about brotherhood? I mean, joining and all that. Brother Paul clasps his fingers together in front of his face, elbows resting on the table, and sighs. Now, Monty, entering the brotherhood isn't something to be taken lightly. Oh, I understand, Brother Paul, but, I mean, it's just come over me. This rush, I haven't felt like this since Clinton got elected. Everything seems so fresh and open to possibility. Deep down, I've always wanted to reconnect with my Catholicism, Brother Paul. Now it seems something's telling me this is right. This is the time. Please, Brother Paul, I need to pursue this. It could save me. Maybe it's the sparkle of his conviction or the absolute scintillation of his golf shirt. But something in Ernesto's manner brings a little of that twinkle to Brother Paul's eye. All right. Here's what you do. Oh, okay, fantastic. What? Come on, brother, preach it. I still have parents and teachers to see. But you can go across to the front office and talk to Sister Olympia. Sister Olympia still works here? I can't believe that. Yes, Sister Olympia is very dedicated to the children. You talk to her, and she'll give you some information to look over. Oh, that's terrific, Brother Paul. I can't thank you enough. Really, I can't. See, Trent, absolute saint. Understand? Yes, Uncle Monty, St. Paul. Oh, man, I am on cloud nine. I really am. I really feel great about this. Trent, you old rascal, why didn't you tell me Brother Paul was your teacher? I told you when we walked in. Ernesto looks away to somewhere above Trent's head and nods sagely. Yes, so you did. The meeting ends much as it began, except for the hug Ernesto gives to Brother Paul, which leaves Brother Paul's habit rather sassy. On leaving the room, Ernesto turns to Trent. Hey, can you take a ride home with Carson's family? Oh, come on, Uncle Monty. Just get the info from Sister Olympia and we can go. Please, Trent. Look, I don't go stepping on your dreams. Oh, like when you gave me cab money so you could stay after to talk to those carnies at the fair? Like that dream? I'm going to ignore your vibes, Trent. I'm just ignoring them. Believe me when I tell you this is different. That was just a peculiarity. This is a life change. Trent sighs, breath and body. All right, look. I'll ask Mrs. City, okay? But what am I going to tell Helena? I don't know. The truth? I'm guessing I won't be seeing you again till I'm a brother, so don't sweat it too much. I mean, what can they say once I'm all converted? I'll be a man of the cloth. Fine. Oh, this is great, Trent. Terrific. Thank Mrs. City for me. Oh, and Just tell Amund I've gone nuts. Ernesto hugs Trent, and the two break apart from each other. He jogs a few steps down the hall before turning around. Hey, and make sure to use those exact words, okay?